Good evening. Welcome to this meeting of Rydal District Council's Planning Committee. May I welcome members of the public, the press and fellow members. We're not expecting any fire alarms tonight, so if the alarm does go off, it is for real. The exits are the way you came in and out of the doors behind me to the right and congregate in the car park at the top. Ladies and gents, toilets are in the corridor and water is also available in the corridor. Could everyone please make sure your mobile phones are switched off or on silent? We do have a couple of speakers tonight. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to speak and I will give an audible warning when there are 30 seconds left. And do all members have a copy of the agenda papers? Thank you. Now move on to the agenda. Apologies for absence, please.
Apologies have been received from Councillor Burke. Councillor Paul Andrews will substitute.
Thank you. Agenda item two is minutes of the meeting held on the last meeting, whenever it was. 20th of December 2016. I'll move those minutes. Do I have a seconder? Thank you. Several. Any questions on those minutes? Councillor Thornton.
Chair, I'd just like to express my disappointment, probably a second time, at the pattern of those meetings that gave us only 24 hours from the meeting till the deposition of the papers from Rydal, which gave us no time to look at the paperwork that was going into North Yorkshire and to further adjust that. And I think that given that it's of such importance, it would have been appropriate had we been able to have a proper conversation with a review of the paperwork. I was very grateful to see the paperwork, but I was rather disappointed that it didn't cover all the topics that we raised and that we might have wished to have sent up to North Yorkshire.
Well, we didn't have the time, as we said. I mean, yes, it would have been ideal if it had gone to full council, but because of the time that it came to the planning committee, there wasn't time for it to go there. We've got in, and of course we have put in what we think, and of course all the county councillors could have put in their own if they wanted to add anything. In fact, any of the councillors or members of the public could have done that on top of what this planning committee did. So.
I mean, I think there's always a dilemma when we're a consultee that we have a greater view of our own importance that maybe the persons doing the consulting have. Officers tried to get an extension to the consultation time and were told quite clearly, no, you're not having one. And so that put us in an invidious position because the period for the consultation was what it was. In fact, we have an urgent item tonight which is in exactly the same position. You know, where we've got a consultation which is very, very limited in time, but undoubtedly relating to matters relating to air quality, which is very pertinent in Malton and Norton. But what do? We either take our time, send something in, and it's just disregarded because it exceeds a consultation period, or we do our level best to do what we can. And I think last time out, I think we did that compromise. I think Jill circulated things around and did what she could in the very limited time available and still got a response out to county on undoubtedly what is a very contentious issue. It was better than not commenting, Chairman, or not having your comments, effectively having had your comments returned.
Thank you, but I mean, I think it has to be made perhaps a strong comment to North Yorkshire that if we are supposed to be making a decision on something that I've seen for 2 minutes before the meeting, that is just totally unacceptable. It's a very complex thing. It's been running for years. And if we're supposed to make a comment on this tonight, I think that's just unacceptable.
Well, Chairman, it's either that or don't make a comment, or I could have made a comment and not brought it to you at all. Would you prefer me to do that? I think what we have here is something which landed up with us on the 11th of January. Even though that says the 6th, it came to us on the 11th. That gives us 2 weeks. And it was already beyond the agenda date for this committee. I'm not a magician, Chairman. I can do a lot, but miracles take longer. You know, it's one of those things that we either bring things to you and involve you in that process, or you just rely on officers. We can't tailor the consultation, and clearly the county are telling us, you know, these are their periods and they're not going to change them. And we can write a letter separately to county about their attitude to consultation times, but that's another matter, I think.
Councillor Andrews.
It's the same item, Chairman. I mean, I accept what the planning officer says, but it's the council sent out a response, and you were going to send a copy of the response to every member. I don't think I got a copy of it. I mean, it may have been sent to me, but I don't think I've got it. And I just wondered if it was sent out, and if so, could I have a copy?
You can certainly have a copy, Councillor Andrews. I think the dilemma that we have, because it was 5 minutes to midnight on doing this and sending things out the very next morning to be concluded by that afternoon, was that if you're not on an email, and some members aren't, or you're not on iPads and picking it up, that you'll find something in your pigeonhole. As far as I know, I mean, Jill Thompson's not here tonight, but as far as I know, all members were sent the information. If you haven't got it, I can certainly get it to you.
No, I wasn't expecting it. As I wasn't a member of the committee, I wasn't expecting us to have any input on it. But I was hoping I would see it after it had been sent. And it's, I'm not on email, or I'm not on the council's email anyway. So,
Councillor Andrews, I'm happy to circulate to you what was sent.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, it's been moved and seconded, so I'll put that to the vote. Thank you. That's 7 in favour, 2 abstentions and 1 against. Moving on to agenda item 3, which is urgent business. I do have one item, as Gary was saying, of urgent business, which we will take after the agenda. Item 12. We'll take that at item 12. Thank you. Agenda item 4 is declarations of interest. Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Just one, item 8, personal and non-prejudicial.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs Farnell.
Thank you. Items 6 and 8, personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary interest.
Thank you. Did you, Councillor Mrs Goodrick, did you indicate? No, sorry. Councillor Mrs Shields.
Thank you, Chairman. As a member of the county, I'm involved in the latest item we have for tonight, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. Item 11. I have been to the council and I have been canvassed.
Thank you. Councillor Thornton.
Thank you. Item 11 is personal, non-prejudicial, and if it comes to debate, I would not take part nor vote.
Thank you. And for myself, Councillor... Agenda item 6. Yeah, I'm just doing mine. Agenda item 6, personal non-prejudicial. Councillor Mrs. Fan.
Likewise, item 6, personal non-prejudicial.
Thank you. So we now move on to the schedule of items to be determined by committee. Agenda item 6 is 16/01839/ Major Full. The application site is Canadian Fields, Gale Lane, Norton. Proposal is change of use of agricultural land to allow siting of 28 holiday lodges in association with Canadian Fields campsite, together with formation of site roads, car parking and turning areas and associated landscaping.
Thank you, Chairman. As you can see, at the time that we... produce the agenda report, we essentially weren't in a position to make a recommendation to you, Chairman. Members, no doubt, will be familiar with this site from the declarations that have already been made, but also recollections of earlier planning permissions granted on the site. There has been some further progress since the report was written, and my understanding is that the applicant and their, I'll say agent, but I think a supporter, have met the highway authority on the site to discuss the issue relating to Gale Lane, which, if members are familiar with Gale Lane, is quite a narrow lane leading from the site back towards the A170. And suggestions are that passing space is provided on the site adjacent to the lane may at various points then overcome the highway objection. Now, received some information today, but I'm not sure whether that's the formal plan showing where the passing spaces would be, so we need to clarify that. But of course that needs to be now the subject of reconsultation locally with the parishes, those third parties that have expressed an interest, and also the highway authority. You'll also note from the committee report that there was a reference to an earlier decision and enforcement authority that is yet to proceed. So taking those three things in the round, Chairman, we thought it would be useful for members to carry out a site visit before we actually produce the final report. I think one of the concerns of officers, if members are able to look at page 11, is that and what that shows is the entirety of the land ownership. The blue area, if you like, is the area which is covered by existing planning permissions, and the red area is the proposal for the site extension for the additional lodges. And it's the totality of that we would wish members to really see, Chairman, and I think a site visit would be useful in the circumstances. So hence the recommendation of a site inspection to be carried out before the next meeting.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Okay, well, it's no questions then. It's my ward, so I'm going to move that we do have a site visit for that. So do I have a seconder? Thank you. So I'll put that to the vote, please. Yeah, it is unanimous, thank you, that we do have a site visit on that one, and we'll...
I assume, Chairman, that will be a fortnight today. We will be writing to the applicant and their agent to confirm that date, and also the time, Chairman, which we'll, I guess, sort out at the end of the meeting.
Yep.
But it should be a fortnight today.
Fortnight today, yeah. Thank you. Now move on to agenda item 7. Application number 16/01250, major reserve matters. The application site is land south of Westgate, Old Malton, and the proposal is for the erection of 24 number 4-bedroom dwellings, 9 number 3-bedroom dwellings and 6 number 2-bedroom dwellings with associated garaging, parking, amenity areas and landscaping to include demolition of and some rebuilding of existing site buildings.
Thank you, Chairman. Members will probably recall that this was one of the four sites that we dealt with way back in 2014, which was submitted by Fitzwilliam Trust Corporation and Commercial Developments Partnership in and around Malton. And this site in particular is almost in three parts, but it included the former County Council Highways Depot in Westgate, the adjacent farm buildings at Coronation Farm, which were largely redundant, although there were three or four more traditional buildings within them, particularly the two on the frontage adjacent to Westgate. And then the southern half of the site is essentially a paddock which extends as far south as the boundary with the cemetery. And that was an application which was granted outline planning permission in principle way back in 2014 now. This is the reserve matters following on from that outline planning permission, Chairman, and is for the erection in detail of 39 dwellings in total. The revised plan on page 21 hopefully members can see the revised plan there, has been further revised again with a very minor tweak. And if members are able to home in on the southern end of the site in between plots 17 and 18, where it actually uses the words Town Street. I wouldn't necessarily describe it as Town Street, Chairman. It's the access to the cemetery off Town Street, but been noted as Town Street there, where you'll see the driveway to plot 17, and adjacent to it there's a brick paved area which is actually a footpath link. And as it's aligned there, just on that particular plan, it's actually about 2 metres further to the left than it should be. We do have a further revision to that plan which avoids the tree spread at that point, because there are some very tall lime trees there, and members will recall at the outline stage that there was a requirement that dwellings and any buildings avoid that area. So there is a slight realignment of that footway to avoid the trees. But in all other respects, then, the layout that you see on page 21 is the final layout that we've arrived at. I think the point to draw to your attention, really, in terms of the main changes to the layout itself, really relate to how the proposed dwellings affect the former council houses on Westfold, which, as you can see on the top left-hand corner of the site, you just get an outline of where those dwellings are. Those dwellings are set relatively close to the site, and I think one of the few comments that we got at the time of the outline application was from an occupier of one of the dwellings who was concerned about privacy. And the nearest dwellings on plots 25 and 26, we've renegotiated the single-storey dwellings on the site, or two of them, into that area, so there's no overlooking. And on plots 23 and 24, which you can see at the extremity of the turning head, those two dwellings, as shown now, are previously in a situation where previously there was three dwellings shown. So on the original plans, we had a two-storey gable quite close to that southern boundary. Again, that's been moved away. So by reorienting buildings around the plot, we've effectively improved the lot of the adjacent residents on Westfold by some margin. I think it's also of note that originally we did get a letter of objection to the first set of plans. We've had no response at all to the reconsultation, and I'm just taking that as an agreement that what we've negotiated has overcome those objections. The other thing just to point out on the layout really is that the approach to the development onto Westgate, or from Westgate into the site, was to try and recreate the feeling of a linked street. And so previously there were some bungalows in that area, and they've been relocated away from that area. So we now have more cottage-style buildings in that location. And where the development opens out into the depth of the site, it becomes a bit looser around the green area. I think it's also important to state that is a green. The original drawing did show, I'll call it a surface water lagoon, but it wasn't. It was something we were concerned of, and that feature has been dispensed with altogether, Chairman. It is a green space that actually has some meaning in terms of an open space around which the road and the private driveway circulates. So that's really the sort of main change, Chairman. The other changes really relate to the individual dwelling types proposed, and what you have on pages 26 onwards are a series of individual dwelling types, and you'll see from the types, if you home in on page 26, for example, but this is typical of many of them, that the details are picking up on the local vernacular with end stacks and things of that nature. The council's conservation officer did make a request for a further stack on one of the frontage plots on plot I think it's 37, and that's now been updated. I'll just go back to the layout to confirm which one it was, Chairman. But that's now also been amended. I think it was plot, 39. Sorry, not 37. The other main point to stress is that the applicants have sought to retain the existing stone buildings which form parts of plots 1 and 38. And I'll show you those buildings in a moment, but effectively they become linked to the dwellings on those particular plots, forming additional accommodation for those particular house types. I'll just show you some photographs, Chairman. So this is one of the buildings that is to be retained. This is on the left of the existing gateway into Coronation Farm. So it's the second of the. If members are looking at page 22, this is the one that's in the centre of the, more towards the centre of the drawing. So this building is retained as part of that plot. This is looking up Westgate, out towards. So behind me is Town Street. This is looking at Westgate, going out into the open countryside. And if members can see, there's another building here. This is the depot in here. This building's also retained as part of the scheme. So this is the furthest extent of the existing buildings kept, and Westfold, is beyond there. So this is panning round. This is obviously part of the depot. All of this goes. So that's all demolished. And this is looking back the other way. So that's that building I was showing you first that's retained in the street scene. So it's quite a part and parcel of the character of that part of Old Malton. This is gated off now because they've already started sort of clearing the site and doing some archaeology. But these are the more modern buildings that would be removed as part of the scheme on Coronation Farm. I thought it'd be useful to give you this view. So to orient yourself, this is the public footpath which goes from, I'm trying to think of the name of the road now, but it's from the Campbell Trust direction from the roundabout behind me. This footpath goes all the way off to Westgate. And in fact, there's a little diversion that goes through Westfold. These are the houses on Westfold here. So in the foreground, you've got the cemetery, and the development site is beyond it. This is just panning across. So the development site is in this area here. The tall trees I was talking about earlier are those ones. So you can see why the works need to avoid them. And this is a view up the cemetery driveway. Again, these are the trees in question. So although they're quite tall, they've got quite a narrow spread. But you can appreciate why the Tree and Landscape Officer had put a 15-metre limit there on the extent of the back of the building, because the shadowing of those is quite considerable. This layout meets that limit. And this is just further up the track, so you get a feel of how tall these trees are, and you can see Westfold in the distance. And this is just looking back across the development site now. So all of these modern buildings, or more modern portal frame buildings, and the former council depot go, and the access comes through in this area here. And that's just another view of the site, Chairman. Nothing further to add at this stage, Chairman. If there are any questions, I'll try and answer them.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Andrews.
Too, Chairman. My eyes aren't good enough to read the annotation there. What does the brown colour mean? What does the blue colour mean? And what does the green colour mean? I can't read it, I'm afraid. It's too small for me. It's on the key.
Yes, it is, Chairman. If you've got it on an iPad, you can just widen them out. Essentially, the blue structures were the structures to be retained or rebuilt. All the brown buildings are to go. Yes.
Could you put your mic on, please, Constable?
Pardon? What's the purpose of the green?
They're just adjacent traditional buildings that are not on the application site itself, but obviously kept. So I think they're just making the point that, I think one of the points at the time was one of the adjacent occupiers was quite keen to see this site developed, but the buildings that were capable of being kept as much as they could be.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Any other questions for the officer? No? Okay, so we'll move into debate. Councillor Andrews, it's your patch, I do believe.
Well, yes, Chairman. This is a detailed application, so it's not possible to move a refusal at the refusal at this stage. Although you will recall that I was totally against this application when it came in, and I'll just reiterate: there's the issue about flooding, the sloping of that land comes down right onto where the cemetery is. There's the issue of access, because the access goes onto Westgate, which is a narrow road, and you've got so many houses onto there as well. And there's the issue of overdevelopment of Malton, etc. But having said that, I appreciate the planning officer's efforts to adjust the design so as to satisfy the applicants of the residents of Westfold. I can't possibly move approval. I shall be abstaining because of my objection in principle to this particular site.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak?
Just on a point of information, Chairman, we have had an application to discharge quite a number of the conditions on the outline planning permission, and some of those relate to technical drainage details in particular. So we're still working through the minutiae of those. So clearly drainage and highway issues were probably comprising two-thirds of the conditions on the planning permission. So we're still working through those, Chairman. So before anything can commence, they need to be signed off.
Anybody else? Councillor Mrs. Frank.
Can I just ask, because of Councillor Andrew's question, I've just looked a bit more closely at this. Where the green buildings are that are not actually within this site, I understand that. But on the site plan on page 21, there are two houses, site 1 and site 6, which actually butt up against those buildings. Can I ask what those buildings are used for and what
On where it says number 13 on the on the plan, it's a dwelling.
Sorry,
it's a dwelling.
Oh, that's another dwelling, is it?
If I oh, sure, I've got a photograph of it somewhere. Just bear with me a minute. Oh, there you go. So it's that building there.
Okay. Yeah. And do the two houses, site 1 and site 6, do they actually butt onto that? House then, or is there a gap between it, or
no? They physically attached to it.
Physically attached to that house.
I think to be blunt, looking at the configuration of it, at some point in time they were part and parcel of what was called Coronation Farm House. But of course things have gone on, and the house has been sold, and the farm buildings have then been used by somebody else separate. But that is what I think historically take to be Coronation Farm House. And all the rest is part and parcel of the folds and the other barns that belong to the farmhouse, but they've been hived off separately. So I suspect it's been some time since Coronation Farm's been used as the farmhouse. But yes, they physically attach. Yeah.
Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
I just wanted to be clear, because it says there's a mixed palette of materials to be used. But the houses in this area are predominantly stone face. Will that be the case in this instance?
It's a combination of two. Actually, surprisingly, amount of brick in Old Malton, really. We all think of Old Malton and think of stone immediately, don't you? But in terms of, these, for example, the brick in here next to stone, but because it's quite a washed-out pale brick, it's about the detail of it more than anything else, although move along and Westfold is about as orangey red a brick as you could wish to get. I'll stress that isn't what they've been proposing here. We have had some materials promoted as part of the scheme, but the applicants have agreed that and those materials may well be fine, but we haven't had samples submitted and sample panels built, so I think they've agreed to not wish to apply to have those materials agreed at this stage, because we haven't physically held them in front of us. But it's a combination of stone and appropriate brick, pantile and some slate, and it's not going to be any more than that.
Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Could you remind me, Chairman, how many of these are going to be affordable? They're done by Broadacre, of course. It's the whole lot, isn't it? It is the entire lot. Right, thank you very much.
Councillor Thornton.
Just to follow up on that, are the remaining eight sort of vied off to another site?
The Section 106 agreement that we dealt with in terms of affordable housing and viability was all part and parcel of the Moulton cluster. So if members will recall, there was quite a complicated viability appraisal relating to the whole of the scheme. So that was I think it was a special planning committee we had, I think, with four applications. And so that included the Showfield, a site that we'll call Peasy Hills Road, because that's the site that the developers call them, but it was the site next to the Rainbow Lane Equine Centre, which was essentially the site that was being promoted as the focus for the affordable housing. And it was only as a result of further negotiation that we got any affordable housing on this site. Actually, it wasn't being promoted at the outset. And of course, the fourth site was Eden Camp, the site that's coming out of the ground now with the roundabout.
And what is the overall level of affordable over those sites?
Well, it depends on how many houses are built at the end of the day, but in rough terms, I would do the sums. It's around about, I'm having to do this mentally in my head at the moment. And it does depend on what comes forward on Peasy Hills, because we suspect we might have more. But if it's on the basis of the number that we dealt with at the time, it was around about 55 over 300, so whatever that equates to in percentages, a sixth, about 17%, 16, 17%. But you remember, Chairman, that the viability here was largely swayed by contributions towards the relocation to the livestock market. It wasn't a straightforward scheme, Chairman. You've already made that decision, so we're not in a position to go back on this. So interesting questions they are, but we're dealing with a reserve matter here.
But perhaps if another site comes forward, we can catch up on that. Because I thought we were aiming for 30%. So I understand.
A policy requirement, Chairman, is 35% in most of Rydale. There are some higher value areas where it's 40%, but that we take a 5% off-site contribution in those circumstances. But all of those requirements are subject to whatever viability is put forward. But equally, if a scheme, and that's based on the figures that we knew at the time, clearly if on the site that we're anticipating will come forward, comes forward with a greater number, then clearly if that can be accommodated, then in other planning respects, there's no reason why that number couldn't exceed. But it does depend on what comes forward, Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. Just two items. The first, I feel obliged to make at every planning application from now on, which is I see no solar on the roofs. And the other one is the level of nitrogen dioxide, the air quality. And hidden away deep in the recesses of the planning portal is an air quality assessment done by people from hard by the estate. Can I bring to the attention of the committee 10.4.2, there are no clear trends in monitoring results for the past 6 years. So this is talking about the Moulton air quality area.
Which report is that, Chairman?
Sorry. Thank you. Not for a little while, I think. The four sites that were being brought together and considered as a planning application in 2015, there was an air quality and another environmental impact assessment done.
That was in respect of phase three for the Showfield, that report, I think.
I think it was all four sites.
Whatever. I think the report that was submitted that suggested there was a no overall trend was not a view agreed by our own environmental health officer, who would strongly argue that there is an overall trend, and that overall trend is downwards. I don't think he agrees with that report.
whatever your view on that, and I've actually had some further examination of those figures, and that would agree with this report. But the forecast for the air quality, with or without the official emissions reductions, that is, I think, a government expectation that emissions will reduce, which I think cannot necessarily be borne out given the emissions fiddling that goes on by the car companies, the speed to which we get electrification of cars, and the amount of cycling and those sorts of issues. But without emission reduction, which is what they assume, the level of nitrogen dioxide exceed the objective level at 8 receptor locations in 2019. So this fits in with the air quality thing that we have to absorb and consider, but it just begs the question, how much more development can we have? I know we've given planning permission for this. How much more development can we have in Moulton without addressing the infrastructure required to keep the air quality appropriate?
Chairman, I'm happy to answer these sorts of questions, but not on the hoof. I think the view of the Environmental Health Officer is that the trend is downwards, and the most recent analysis suggested there was only an exceedance at one measuring point. Now, the Environmental Health Officer is not here tonight to give you chapter and verse on that, and clearly as time moves forward, then with further planning permissions, we can look at other mitigations, all sorts of things. That's not to suggest that there isn't a point at which, you know, Moulton's junctions or particular streets can't take any more. But as it stands at the moment, this particular scheme washed its face in terms of all manner of technical reports when we considered the outline permission. So as far as this application goes, we're dealing with a reserve matter. So we're not dealing with the principle, we're just dealing with the details here. I mean, the point that you make, I'm more than happy to take away and have that discussion, and if necessary, bring you reports. But I think this isn't the application to have that sort of discussion about air quality and what it means for Moulton and Norton or Pickering or anywhere else for that matter.
Chair, could I sort of embrace that concept of having a proper discussion about the air quality? It is a very, very complex issue. The numbers are very, very puzzling. There's mathematical modelling to take on board, and I think it would be something that members may wish to have a proper discussion and sort of an information and discussion about. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? Councillor Andrew.
I just come back, Chairman, and say that if you will recall my observations on the Rydell plan at the time, it would appear that a lot of my concerns are coming home to roost.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? Okay. Well, we need to make a decision tonight. Councillor Mrs. Farnell.
Thank you. As the officer said, this is a reserve matters application. I'm pleased that the officers and the applicant have worked together to overcome some of the overlooking and move things around on the site. Happy that there's a green space, therefore I'll move the recommendation.
Thank you. Anybody else? Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Chairman. Merely to second Councillor Farnell's proposal.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote, please. Thank you. That's 9 in favour and 1 abstention. It will be recorded, thank you. Now move on to agenda item 8. The application number is 16/01659/Major Full. The application site is York Meadows Sheriff Hutton, and the proposal is for the change of use of agricultural land to allow the formation of 30 number static caravan pitches and 42 number touring caravan pitches with formation of crushed stone access tracks together with erection of extension to existing site office / community block and the provision of a play area, part retrospective.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Chairman. I don't have any particular updates on this application. In fact, I think depending on how long you've been on the planning committee, you might have already been to this site, although I guess it was several years ago. I can't remember how long ago it was now. But the existing site is located, or the main part of the built-up area of this site that's currently in use is located, I'll say to the rear and some way away from the main road, which is the main road from Sheriffhut and leading to York. So if members are able to look on page 61, what you have there, if you're able to home in a little bit, on the blue land is the area of the site which is where most of the existing development is. It's located furthest away from the road, and it's where the reception buildings and main of the buildings are located. Although there is an extension to that building also proposed as part of this scheme. From a highway safety point of view, you'll see that the red line has a somewhat unusual shape, and that's because the access actually runs for a short distance parallel with the roadway, because that was the safest place for the actual access to be onto the road network. And so what you have on the plans before you is essentially a proposal for the southern half of the site for a combination of differing types of accommodation. On page 62 you have a revised plan which actually has an error on it, and if members are able to look at the row of olive green statics, which are the ones nearest to the road and home in on the legend or the key, it's showing those static pictures as phase one. Well, in fact, that's phase three. It's the last phase, and the reason that the phases are working from the blue to the red to the olive green colour is that the southern boundary of the site, where it's showing planting there is some existing planting, is probably the least established. So basically the plan is to work backwards from north to south, so that as that establishes, then the screening becomes more and more. I'll show you some photographs on a moment, but the good thing of this is that the western boundary is very well screened by existing hedgerows, so there is well established hedgerows as well as additional planting that's been done on this site. And then the northern part of the site, or this red line application site, is the area where they're proposing touring caravans, which then butt up to where the existing site starts at the current time. So I'll just go through some photographs for you. This is the existing entrance to the site, and this is the view looking back to in the York direction. I'm sorry, this is very dark, but this is the view looking back in the other direction. So there's the signpost there to the little lane that goes off to Lilling. Yeah. And in the distance, you sort of start to get a feel for you're approaching the industrial estate and thence the main village of Sheriffhut. So this is the trackway that runs parallel to the road. So it's looking back down the trackway, and this then sweeps into the site. And this is a view, the trackway then carries on, with the main road in the distance coming into the depth of the site at the current as it currently runs. And this is the area of the area that I said of landscaping that wasn't that well established. It's in this area, one of these areas here. So you get a feel for how whilst they've done a heck of a lot of planting, this one still needs to establish. These are some of the green routes between around the site already, which tend to be used as walkways around the site by existing users. You get another feel for another one in this area here. So there's been quite a lot of incidental planting. You can see, you know, this is all new planting, but it's probably been in there a few years now, and it's starting to take effect. So So again, you get a view of this planting line here. This is looking back towards the trackway. Again, you get a feel for some of the planting. You see all these cones are all things that have been planted. So God knows how many thousands of trees and hedgerows they've planted on this site, but there's quite a lot of them. And again, planting in this area here. So again, although it's well established, good quality planting, it's yet to come to its full effect. There's some of the stuff that's been planted and already growing. This is the western boundary I was talking about. So as you can see, that's the well-established hedgerow. I'm sorry these are coming out as dark as they are, but again, there's a sort of trackway that goes adjacent to the hedgerow boundary, and again, within the site, there's a heck of a lot of planting in this area here. This is the, I'll call it the reception utility building. This is about halfway up the site, and there's an extension proposed on the far end. So that's it really at this stage, Chairman. The only thing to just confirm is that the Highway Authority have requested that there is an additional section of footway built from the industrial estate back as far as the culvert. It's about 150 metres of footway. That's to assist people who would wish to walk into the village centre, Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Councillor Maud.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I do remember the site visit, and at the time, it's a year or two since, and there was quite a bit of concern about the speed of traffic going past this site. Have there ever been any incidences of problems, people arriving or leaving with this site?
Not that we've had reported to us, Chairman. I mean, certainly when we do the consultation with Highway Authority, usually if there's an accident record, they usually let us know, especially if there's a situation where we're in national speed limit applies in this particular instance, so the vision spay requirements at the outset were quite considerable. Which is why it ended up being as remote from the site as it was. It ended up doubling back on itself because of the vision spay requirements, which were largely to do with vehicle speeds. I'm not aware of any particular reported accident problem. The local member is here, so he might know more than myself.
Any more questions? Councillor Hope.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, to answer your question, no, I haven't heard of any accidents or near scrapes at all. Nothing against you, Gary, but do you think we could afford a new camera? Because... they don't come out very well, but anyway. Just one question. The path that's going up to the culvert, what's happening with the bit from the culvert to the entrance to the industrial estate? Is that going to be no man's land? Because I would rather see the path go up to the industrial estate, because the culvert, if you're going to... Some people will try to get out and come onto the road and then get round the culvert. If that was...
I asked the case officer just to clarify that before tonight's meeting, and the informative that I had was just requiring, and I'm sure I've got it on this map here, which is, it says there's basically a section of new footway 150 metres long, which is from where it stops now to the culvert.
Well, I think that leaves a bit of void space between the culvert and the industrial estate entrance. I'm going to photograph it now. I couldn't see it anyway.
I haven't, unfortunately, no.
Couldn't see it anyway.
I suppose it's a question of, well, one, what the Highway Authority thinks appropriate in terms of appropriate safety for pedestrians, but also balancing that with what's proportionate to the development in terms of cost, and also what will physically fit, you know, in the verge and in those areas. My understanding was that they'd come to an agreement of an additional 150 metres length of footway in that direction to sort of assist the linking of the site to the village.
Have the highways mentioned anything about better signing on the roads, on the approach roads to it and from it, from Sherifutton and from York?
No, Chairman. I have a, it's not really directly related to this, Chairman, but I have had a complaint about signs relating to the vicinity of the industrial estate area, which highways are looking at. So whether it will get picked up as part of that, I don't know. But we have had a concern about the proliferation of signs in verge locations, which is with this engineer. But it's not direct. They do.
Okay, are there any more questions? No. It's back to you then, Councillor Hope, as a local member.
Can't get much of a rest. Right, I'm amazed I haven't had a lot of more complaints about this. Last time we looked at a caravan site, they were coming out of the everywhere complaining about it, weren't we? It's evidently needed in Sherifutton, but it's going to be the caravan centre of the north soon, I think. But I can't find any faults or any planning issues not to go for it. The only thing I would say is that the screening is, if we can condition it, the screening is done at the sort of south side and the other sides. The west side's all right. The footpath needs sorting, definitely. And entrance safety. That's the one thing I have, is that path and the safety there, and the people coming out and signage for the caravans that are coming up thinking, oh, blimey, that's the way we want to be, and having to reverse down there. But I haven't heard anything yet. I'd be like Councillor Maud looking into the future. But other than that, I think it's going to be all right, and I'll move a recommendation.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Frank.
Yeah, we're obviously a tourist area and we need more tourists. I would like to second that proposal, but I just would like to ask, is there a rule to say that static caravans have to be all set in rows, regimented in rows, or could they think of a bit more interesting and innovative plan to set these caravans out to make them a bit more interesting for tourists that come? Do they have to be in
the answer to that is no, they don't have to be. There are minimum distances apart from I think more from a fire regulation point of view than anything else. If one of them did go up, then there's a reasonable space in between. And I take your point about the inspired nature of the rows of them. I think the calibre of this scheme, I think, is around the planting that they've done on the site and what they've done, which sort of adds to the feeling of it, these lines of things being in a wooded setting. I think I can think of other ones where we've had an existing woodland which they've arranged the things around the trees to do it, because I think they're coming from a blank canvas here. They're doing the and no doubt by doing it like this they potentially maximise the number of units that can get on the site, I suppose. I take your point, but I think in terms of public planning interest issues, we'd struggle to sort of say, well, you've got to jiggle these about a bit to make it look a little bit more interesting. But I think I understand what you're saying. It's a little bit mundane, perhaps.
I think it's quite a lot mundane, and I just think that if we are getting tourists to come to this area, it would be nice if they did enjoy their stay, and for their enjoyment, I just think it would be far better to have a nicer layout than this. But having said that, I'm not against it.
I mean, Chairman, we can feed those comments back as a general comment, but I mean, I wouldn't wish to hang my hat on a refusal based on whether or not they were slightly jiggled about a bit, yeah.
you. Do you want to come back, Councillor Hope?
Just on the same vein, why do all mobile homes have to be that bright yellow or thing? Why can't they be painted a darker colour to fit in with the landscape?
They don't have to be, Chairman. They don't have to be. I mean, I think, again, it's dependent on the nature of the homes that we're dealing with in terms of the statics, but very often sometimes we get the timber-clad versions, more like a lodge than a cabin. These, I think, more the cabin end of things, but if members have a strong view about the first line being a more recessive treatment, however that's dealt with, then that's a consideration that you might wish to think about.
Okay, anybody else wishing to speak? No. Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote, please. Thank you, that's unanimous, it is approved. Now move on to agenda item 9, application number 16/00072/Outline. The application site land at Golden Square, Lower Marishes, and the proposal is for the erection of an agricultural worker's dwelling.
In fact, this application is one that came to committee towards the end of last year. I think it was the 25th of October meeting, and you probably recall we deferred the application for further information to be submitted, which was submitted. Did have a meeting and went into a lot more detail in terms of what the ancillary buildings, the bulk of the buildings on site are actually used for, which were for a variety of predominantly storage uses, one by a major car component supplier manufacturer who's located in the Pickering area, who clearly, in addition to their own expansion, has huge storage requirements for packaging and product. There's also on the site a building used as a salt store for A1. So you'd appreciate that. That's used on occasions. And there's also two other smaller operators, who one of whom's a furniture business, uses one site as a store, and also a vehicle repairer in one of the other buildings. There are some additional bits of information on the late pages, Chairman, which I hope members have had a chance to read prior to tonight's meeting. The essence of the additional information that we received, which also included accounts information, demonstrated, which I suppose what started out as a diversification project on this farm in 2004 was the first permission, has been spectacularly successful to the point that it is now, I think, probably the larger part of the business. Equally, and that's on a 300-acre farm based on arable. Longevity of those, the main occupier, has been at least for the last 13 years and shows no signs of abating. Most of the operators require access to the site or the buildings on a 24/7 basis, so it's quite an unusual set of circumstances where the residents on the site provide as part of that service the loading and unloading of the vans and the lorries when they're here. There's also a public weighbridge on the site, Chairman. So having deferred the application and gone to site and seen how the business operates and obtained even more information, I think this is one where, on balance, we've accepted the need for a rural workers' dwelling, but not a conventional agricultural workers' dwelling. And I think that's what really set us thinking as to how we could legitimately control this going into the future. And so, Chairman, you'll see on the late pages with the additional report that we were still in coming up to the recommendation of approval. coming up with still needing to think about how the conditions would apply to this dwelling. And the conditions that we've come up with are, in recommending approval for this outline application, aside from the usual outline and reserve matters proposals and materials to be agreed in the fact they've applied for a single-storey dwelling only, aside from further requirements from the council's ecologist, the key condition really related to how the occupancy of the dwelling could be protected in this instance. And so what we've come up with is a form of words which reads, the occupation of the rural worker's dwelling hereby approved, rather than an agricultural worker's dwelling, shall be limited to a person employed at Golden Square Farm in connection with the day-to-day management of the other business enterprises. That's important because that relates to the businesses that we've established at Golden Square Farm and the operation of the agricultural holding, or a widow or a widower of such a person, or for any resident dependents. And then the condition goes on to say, the dwelling hereby approved shall not be sold or leased separately from the holding business known as Golden Square Farm unless otherwise approved in writing by the local planning authority. And so that's the key condition, Chairman, that we're recommending. I'm aware that we've got a speaker tonight. I think the agent's registered to speak. So whilst that condition has been shared with the agent, Chairman, I've yet to hear what they have to say on the matter. So I can show you some photographs if you wish, Chairman. You have seen them before. It was a few months ago. If you want me to show you, I'm more than happy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, very quickly then, this is the existing farmhouse. This is the track leading into the depth of the site. So this is the first of the newer buildings behind you. And this is looking back down the track, and the site of the proposed single-storey dwelling would be in this area here. So it's just on the approach into the site. You get a glimpse of another building behind just at this point. And panning across the application site, you get a view of some of the other buildings. I mean, it is a very extensive range of buildings, Chairman. It's just that they're very well screened from the A169. So panning around again, you get a view of some of the other buildings, some of which are still used by the farm, but the vast majority are used by the other businesses. And this is within the site, Chairman, so you're coming from the entrance in into the open area at the back of the site. These are typical of the buildings on the site, so they're dark green-clad buildings, which in that landscape setting recede into it quite well because they're screened by sort of blocks of trees and the like, so they're dark coloured and sit in it quite well. So within the depth of the site, this is perhaps one of the older buildings on the site. You really don't see these from outside of the site or the A169. This is panning across. This is some of the other buildings. And there's one of the typical sort of lorry being either loaded or unloaded there. This is coming out towards the back of the site, so that's the newest building there. That sort of gives you a feeling. I mean, it's a very extensive range of farm buildings, Chairman, that have permission for a variety of business uses, but it's mainly storage.
Thank you. So we do have the speaker, the agent, William Tyson, please.
Good evening. Members of the committee, I've just chosen to speak tonight to simply relay my clients, Mr. and Mrs. Willis's thanks to both the committee members and Gary Houston, really, for their support of this application at the last committee meeting, and giving myself and Gary time to discuss the application in greater detail, to go through the assessment overall and come up with a clear decision on how to go forward. We hope it's now quite clear that there is sufficient need and justification for this rural workers' dwelling at Golden Square to meet the needs of the applicant's business and to move their business forward further for further growth and, well, overall better working practices for the family. Therefore, I'd just like to thank you again for your consideration on the application, and we hope you will support the recommendation for approval. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? No? Okay, well, we don't have a local member, I don't think. No? No. So, anybody wanted to take it, or Councillor Miss Farnell, did you indicate? Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I was really pleased that we deferred this last when it came to us before. I'm pleased that the officers have worked with the applicant and agent. Agriculture can be a struggle, and diversification is usually the key. They're making a very good business from the different diversification and needs that they've got on the site. And it's nice that we've been able to see that develop. And I'm happy to move the recommendation.
Thank you. Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I'd like to congratulate the planning officer and the agent for coming with a proposal that I can support. I think it's good for industry, agriculture and employment generally in Rydale. The site is set against an existing substantial range of buildings and is anyway very screened. I'm very happy to second the proposal.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs Shields.
Really a question, Chairman. If in due course whoever moves into it passes on, will the tenancy of the dwelling be able to be handed down his family, or would it have to mean somebody coming in who is also going to be employed on the farm generally?
The way the condition is worded, it would enable anybody who was doing what this person does in relation to the business to move into the house, the bungalow rather. Clearly, the current justification is around how the Mr. Willis Senior and Mr. Willis Junior actually work on the farm and assisting the businesses. But if, for example, Mr. Willis retired, and another Mr. Willis in another generation's time came into that same circumstance, if they could be accommodated with this condition worded the way that it is, as long as they're working the way that they work. I think the way that we've worded the condition does give us a little bit of wriggle room, because we've suggested at the end of it the magical words, unless otherwise approved in writing by the local planning authority. But as members will be aware, we're very careful with dwellings in the countryside and how they're occupied. I think to distill this to the case of, we think this is a genuine submission, as opposed to sometimes people taking a flyer at us and trying to get a dwelling that they don't really have any long-term commitment to. That isn't the case here. I think the demonstration of that in terms of the information that I've been provided with, regrettably most of which is confidential because it's got business information and accounts and sensitivities with other businesses, but has demonstrated that they've not put the cart before the horse. They've actually gone into a diversification to assist with the farm and been extremely successful with that. And now that needs to be served in a not dissimilar way to the way that an agricultural worker's dwelling would be met if it was a livestock holding, say, for example, because of the need not just for the work but to live on the holding.
It was calling some while back where people have tried to get an extra dwelling on and perhaps not for the most, honourable, shall we say, of reasons. And this is a genuine thing, so I'm very happy to support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? Councillor Hope?
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I did try to get in to second it, but I was too late. It's nice to see that the council and applicants are working together, and it's an encouraging sign. I will be supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote, please. Yeah, thank you. It is unanimous. It is approved. So we now move on to agenda item 10, application number 16/01242/73A, application site Longhouse, Pottergate, Elmsley. Proposal is variation of condition 12 of approval dated 27/06/2012 to state the development hereby permitted shall be carried out in accordance with the following approved plans. And we've got drawing numbers replaced by another one, increase of roof height to allow for additional domestic storage areas, retrospective application.
Thank you, Chairman. As you can see from the officer report, this site has a planning history, and in particular this application, which is located in what I'd broadly describe as a backland area in Helmsley, is I think the mother of all backland areas, because it's the area between Pottergate and the shops and the marketplace. In that general location, you've got the arts centre, the variety of other buildings, and quite a lot of buildings that have been there for a considerable period of time, which are almost at odds with the traditional form and character of Helmsley, which is back edge of footpath development. What we have in the backland areas, which we'll show you on some photographs in a moment, are some extensive ranges of buildings, sometimes going up as high as three stories at the back of the site, which actually are probably hidden to view for most people unless you've actually gone into the back there and actually walked around and seen what's what. Close to this site, having said that, there are quite a number of relatively new buildings which were built in the early to mid 2000s, which are close to this application site. And I think we had at least one, if not two, appeal decisions in those locations behind the rear of the Feathers, just to orient yourself. If people orient themselves by pubs in market towns, that's where we are, where there are ranges of, generally speaking, terraces of buildings, predominantly two stories in height, which follow that linear pattern. And it was adjacent to that in 2012, where we granted planning permission for the erection of a single-storey dwelling, which has subsequently been called the Longhouse. And it's that dwelling which, as built on site, does not comply with the approved plan. So that's what we've got. At the time that was submitted, and obviously at that time it was submitted, we were having to judge what we thought the impact of the development would be on adjacent premises. There was quite a lot of information submitted in relation to shadow drawings and diagrams and things of that ilk, and members granted planning permission for the scheme that you see on page, and I'm just getting you the page now, page 91. And apologies for the faintness of the drawing, but if you can see on that, you can just, if you home in on the thank you, Councillor Andrew. if you home in on the drawing on page 91, you can see the elevations of that building, and in a faint line, you get an idea of the scale and profile of the buildings that are around them. So they're quite a lot taller, the adjacent buildings. But on page 91, what is also shown, which showed what I'm trouble with my iPad here. Get there in the moment. Sorry, my iPad's just gone blank. But on page 91, what there is a site plan showing what was on the site at the time, which were two sort of domestic garage buildings, was the only way to describe them. They were proposed to be demolished and replaced by the dwelling which we would call the Longhouse. And on that's on page 91. What you have on page 92, and again apologies for the clarity of this, but if you're able to home in on the end elevations, you can see a red dotted line, and that's the difference. It's that much different. And whilst we originally on page 91 we had a dwelling which had all its accommodation on the first, on the ground floor. On page 92 you'll see on the floor plan of that building there is a little stairway going up to what was shown as a storage area. So I'm not sure whether it came around as a result of that, but in any event we have now a staircase going up to a first floor, and the extra 0.5 of a metre obviously gives effect to that being capable of being used as a room. In terms of the elevational differences, the main changes really relate to Velux, flush fitting Velux in the roof, which do not function as windows because they're that high up in the ceilings that they are incapable of being looked out of, so there are no privacy issues with that. On the end gable that faces, which is the bottom right hand of the gables, and again I'll show you some photographs in a moment, there was always a window shown in that area, but that window is now larger than was shown on the previously approved plan. If you pan across you can see the difference in the two. Having said that, it faces directly towards the back of the storage building at the rear of one of the shops on the main street coming out of the marketplace there, which is owned by the applicant, so it doesn't actually look onto anything. But again, I'll show you some photographs of what this building looks like and also hopefully be able to give you an indication of what the differences amount to. Okay, so difficult to compare one with the other, but that's what we're trying to do. So this is how it looks today. So this is so all of these dwellings are relatively new. These are the houses behind the back of the Feathers that were granted on appeal. I think quite a number of actually are potentially used as holiday cottages, but I've been on there a number of occasions and haven't actually seen anybody moving. The back wall of these buildings is the back of the site, so they don't have like a rear garden in that sense. So everything, their private amenity, any amenity space is in this area here. This is the separating wall that I referred to, which is varying in the area of the building anywhere between 1.6 and 1.5 metres high. This is the corner of the longhouse in this area here. So in this area here, for example, this is the lounge and there's nothing at first floor. The second floor is at the far end of the building. This is the adjacent site, and these are the other buildings I was referring to. They're immediately behind this building, and you can see they go from one to two to three stories high. It's important to note that this building has got some chimney stacks on it, and that will be relevant in a minute when I show you some photographs. This is the flank wall of the building, so its front door is there. And it goes to the rear, and that's the storage building I was talking about at the rear, which goes straight onto the shops beyond. This is the side boundary wall, and again you can see the dwellings beyond. This is the back of the site that I was just showing you, and again these buildings, some of them, they've got substantial ranges of buildings that run back from the road. This is the courtyard of the longhouse. This is another alteration from the approved plan, if you compare one with the other, which is a fire door. It doesn't open outwards. You can't walk in from this direction. But if if there was a fire in this area, you could get out from within. So essentially, it was a building regs requirement. This is the view from Pottergate. So you can barely see anything. It's because it's set so far back into the site. So the main public would not really be aware of what's going on in this area here. And the reason I took this is that as this comes here, this is the roadway that bends into where the art centre goes. And this is a continuation of another run of buildings behind those first ones that I just showed you. So this is the longhouse. That's the first run. And here's another run. So you've got another run of dwellings that have come parallel. I thought it was quite useful because you get an indication of the gap between the two. It's actually slightly more than I was expecting to see really when I went out on the site visit. And again, just a view from a slightly different angle, giving you an indication of the space between the front walls of here where the living rooms are and the side of the building here. This is the back of the building from the other side, just showing you this is where it's all a bit dwelling, building, car parking. It's quite a bit of a mix and mash of uses. This is the view looking back from the opposite way, so this is outside of the site, but that's that window I was talking about. So on the original plans it was probably half to maybe two-thirds of the size, but it's facing onto very little. This is a flank wall in this area here, but the principal elevations are on this elevation that's off screen. And that's it looking back towards that access way that we were just looking down. And again, this is the run of the first run. That is the three-storey building I showed you the picture of from the other direction, and this is the parking and yard area belonging to the longhouse. So this building actually casts shadow, and it casts a lot of shadow. And we have some photographs provided by the applicant's agent which show the shadowing beyond this building with chimneys on it. And the longhouse does not have chimneys on it. So at this time of the year, some of the shadowing is coming from this building, not that building. So again, you get a feel for the proportions and the gap in between. I tried to get as close as I could to the boundary wall at this point to show you the spacing between the two. And the reason I took this was it's roughly from there to there that's the difference. So you've got about three, the courses are different sizes, so it's difficult to be absolutely precise, but it's roughly the gutter line, you'd expect it to be about there instead of there. So that's what we're dealing with. On balance, and we've got the benefit of looking at it now with it built, whereas previously before we were estimating and guessing what the impacts might be, we think on balance it's acceptable, Chairman. Clearly, if members weren't of that opinion, then we would have to refuse that application, but the logic would be then that members would be pursuing an enforcement action to secure compliance with the previous plan, not this, not as built. And that would be roof off all the way across and drop everything down. So there is a solution, Chairman. It's just a question of is it expedient, you know, if you think this is not acceptable. The only one thing I would have two comments from the Town Council, which didn't quite sit together, and one of which was relating to... I'm certainly having trouble with my iPad here. Sorry, Chairman. Keeps going blank. Towards the end of the... it's gone blank again. Come on. I don't know what it is, Chairman. It's got to page 95 and it's just gone blank. In essence, Chairman, we had on page 105, and if it ever starts playing again, I can read it from my iPad, when we originally consulted with the Town Council, which was in relation to all of these changes to the building, they said no comment. We then received further... shadowing information from the applicant, which we sent to people, and the consultee response was the council objects to the increase in roof height on the grounds that it contravenes the original planning permission. Well, it always did. And the council would also like to know why the building was allowed to be completed given its increase in height. Well, the answer to that one is, well, the works were at this roof level by the time we'd actually had a complaint about it, because it wasn't apparent until it got that high. It's one of those, Chairman. I have absolutely no idea what's up with my iPad, but it's just not going to play ball, Chairman. If there are any questions, Chairman, I'll try and answer them. But on balance, we think... Chairman, we think the as-built situation actually is acceptable.
Thank you. We do have the speaker, the agent, Rick Lencarn.
Thank you, Chair, members. It's actually quite sad sat here talking about this scheme because we worked incredibly hard with the planners to actually come up with what I think is quite a fascinating solution for this part of Helmsley. It's quite a demanding site. It's a long, thin site. It has very little potential to actually get daylight into it, and it results in a form that's a building that's 20 metres long and about 5 and a bit metres wide, which is actually quite rare. But it does sit quite nicely when you look at an aerial view of Helmsley and you look at how Burgage plots are developed as a long linear form. It sits quite happily. And we were involved in working closely with the planners to put this scheme forward. We also were involved in getting the building regulation approval, and then my client secured a way forward with the contractor, and we had little involvement after that sort of time. And it was during that time that clearly a decision was made that, well, they're going to just add a little bit more onto the roof, with my client seeing the opportunity to create further storage at first floor level. My client, Mrs. Burden, relocated here from another house in Helmsley after her husband died. She had quite a large four-bedroomed house with an awful lot of storage, so clearly she was just looking at the opportunity to find space to have all the worldly goods, if you like, out of the way of the living space. Where we are today, standing back from it, do I think, personally, this is an issue? I think the only way that you can gauge that is we did prepare drawings as the scheme was before and as it is now, in terms of the impact of sunlight onto the buildings on the right-hand side here. And quite frankly, the difference is marginal. We're talking about a foot or so of difference of daylight that's perceived on these cottages. Do I think that's an issue? I personally don't. As I said when I started, I'm actually quite sad that I'm sat here trying to represent the scheme. On balance, do I think it's a good solution, an appropriate solution for the site, which enhances the area? Because we're talking about, you know, knocking down 4 or 5 concrete and asbestos lock-up garages and virtually a two-storey red brick building. I think it's a great improvement. As I say, I'm just sad that I'm here trying to talk about the margins of what I think, in the scheme of things, are fairly trivial, but that's for members to judge for themselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Chairman, there's just one other point I just wanted to mention when I'd got this photograph as it is, because at this time of the year the sun's pretty low in the sky, and the shadow cast by these and that roof line at certain points is creating more shadow there than this, partly because this extends beyond that. But you can see the relative heights of the three-storey buildings in relation to the height of I'll call it a single-storey building with a storage space in the roof. I think the concern that we've had raised by residents next door, which is in some extent understandable, is that we originally granted planning permission for a single-storey building, and what we've ended up with is a building with a storage use at first floor at one end, which is capable of use as a room, so therefore a two-storey, even though it's as low profile as you can see as it is. And there's no getting away from that. It is different from what we approved in 2012. But I think the benefit you and we all have now is looking at this as it's built and saying, well, is that acceptable or not? And I think that's the acid test. Although it's not the same as what we've approved, the difference is not as great as I was expecting to see when I went to the site. The impacts are not as great as I was expecting them to be, Chairman. And I think on balance, in terms of amenity, I don't think there's any design issue, Chairman, with this. I don't think there are any conservation area issues with this. It's so similar in approach. I think the only issue we had is, what's the additional amenity impact? And yes, there may be some additional amenity impact, but I don't think it's sufficient to withhold consent.
Thank you. Any questions? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
It's a small question. I'm curious. You showed a picture early on where a doorway was made onto a car park, and that was for a fire reason, and it was part of, you suspected, building regulations. Can I just ask what allowances do we make as planners for that kind of change? Is that something that we have to accept because of the building regulation requirements? How does that work, Gary? Sorry.
The answer to that is not necessarily, really. I mean, it's possible to get to a situation where you've got a planning permission and you can't achieve a building regs on a particular scheme, and vice versa, to achieve a building reg, you might end up saying, well, that's not acceptable in planning terms. This particular difference, if anything, is more aesthetic than a functional issue, in the sense that if you compare one of the few pages we've still got working here, page 91 with page 92, what you have is essentially a blank flank wall adjacent to that parking area. And if I can find the pictures, I'll show you. Yeah, there. These are parking spaces for those taller, older cottages behind. And to be honest with you, that's sort of fairly neither here nor there in terms of what it means to the people who've got car parking spaces, because 99.9% of the time that doorway will be not a functioning doorway. But if, as a result of the building regs, and undoubtedly having gone through the building reg process, that's why that means of escape was there should it ever be needed, it went through that process before it went through ours. And normally what happens is people will get a planning permission and then they'll sort the building regs out, or they'll submit the two together. I think in this case it came about afterwards and was picked up as part of the changes that had been made to the buildings. I don't think that was sort of that pivotal. What was more an issue was the fact that it's that much higher to there.
It was more a question about building regs and planning. You know, if you give a planning permission and building regs says, no, it's got to be like this, where does the householder stand, or a developer stand with that kind of situation?
They have to come back and amend the planning permission if it's material to the case. And sometimes that can be an issue if we've said no windows on a particular elevation and an escape window's needed, or something, we'd want something fixed and they need it opening. You know, those sorts. They tend to be around fire, mainly.
Are there any more questions? No. Okay, well, this is my patch. I personally can't see a problem with it. Now, I'm quite happy to move approval for it, but we have an option with us going to Norton in a fortnight's time for site visit. We could also have a site visit for that, and it can come back to us, whichever. I mean, I'm quite happy to move approval, so that's what I'm going to do. Councillor Maud?
I would be happy to second that, Chair.
Your seconded approval, yeah. Okay, thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak on it? Councillor Cleary?
Very briefly, I wasn't around when this was given the original approval. I think it's a fascinating solution to the site. I think the changes are de minimis, and more important, I can't see that they affect anybody in the immediate neighbourhood. I'm going to support this.
Thank you. Councillor Thornton?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I agree. It's very, very good use of space, and it's a rather pretty building. The only thing that I was wondering about was the upstairs window and the perception of being overlooked. But I see that in the paperwork it suggests that that's going to be replaced with obscure glass. Is that right, Gary?
Sorry, just referring to back to that. There was one point I did need to just draw to your attention, actually, was there were requirements for on the original plan, because of the amenity space that's on the adjacent dwellings is facing the building. It's in the context of bedroom three. Was that be fixed and permanently obscured. But that was a requirement of the original planning permission. but the additional condition here is talking about first floor window on the western elevation, which is the one, the bigger window that I showed you at first floor, which is suggesting that needs to be obscured to an agreed point. And I think there's a solution to be found there. It's quite, I have been inside the building, so I have the added advantage that you do not, but the window is actually taller than eye height, so it's possible to potentially partially obscure the window and do what it needs to do, but there needs to be something submitted, and that's what condition 2 is seeking to capture.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the neighbour would be happy with that and the understanding of that, I don't see a problem with
the neighbour it affects actually hasn't objected. It's the neighbour that window faces hasn't actually objected. They have two windows at ground and first floor that face that way, which are permanently shuttered with internal blinds, and the principal elevation is the other elevation. That neighbour hasn't objected, but actually from that window you're facing towards those windows. So that was the thinking behind the condition. The neighbours that are most affected were ones that were covered by the original conditions on the original planning permission in any event. So those windows are already at that level.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote, please. Thank you, that's unanimous, it is approved. So we now move on to agenda item 11, which is unauthorised encampment at Kirby Misperton.
Got no photos, Chairman. This was largely as much for members' information as anything else, bearing in mind when we had this, I don't think it was probably as widely publicised on TV, social media, wherever. But for those members who haven't yet picked up that information, we have an encampment adjacent to the adjacent to the A6, well, close to the junction of the A69 with the turn off to Kirby Misperton and Flamingo Land. And whilst we have yet to receive any complaints about this particular encampment, technically speaking, what we have is an unauthorised encampment there in terms of our land use. And at the moment, the situation is that we're together with others sort of monitoring the situation. The encampment has been there since, I don't know whether it was before Christmas, but it was certainly between Christmas and New Year. It became apparent to us on the return to work after the New Year, and officers of the council have been there and spoken with people who are resident at the camp. I think it's fair to say that in planning terms, the camp is fairly low key at the moment, is my judgment call. But there have been suggestions that the camp may grow. It does depend on you know, expectations. I think the suggestion was that there may be a doubling, trebling of the size of the camp, dependent on, I suggest, interest, the weather, and all sorts of things. That hasn't occurred in the intervening sort of period of time in the last fortnight. But there have been the odd occasion where we've had traffic parked adjacent to the roadway leading to Flamingo Land, some complaints of mud on the road. The Highway Authority, for their part, and as you appreciate, their area office is very close to this, so they're sort of keeping an eye on that side of things. But at this stage, it was just merely to make members aware of the fact that we have got this situation. Whilst there is support from some circles, we've also getting some mutterings of, well, what are you going to do about it? And at the moment, I think it's fair to say that the situation is that we're monitoring the situation. As I say, we've yet to have any formal objections to the encampment. But it wouldn't surprise me if in the near future we perhaps get some, and then we have to start a more formalised process, perhaps through an enforcement investigation and reporting something formally to you at some future point. But we're not there yet. And I just wanted members to be aware that the fact that you haven't seen anything doesn't mean that we're not doing anything. It's a sort of a keeping the powder dry, watching what's going on, and if it's expedient to do it because we suddenly find we've got problems, be they traffic or other, that they will be bringing something to you at a future meeting, Chairman. I'm happy to try and answer any questions that I can. I have to say some of the information is quite sketchy because that's the nature of the beast that we're dealing with, Chairman.
Councillor Andrews, you've indicated.
Yes, Chairman. Can I go straight into speaking without going through the questions, or are you going to take questions first?
Chairman, I'm not asking you to do anything tonight. This was a verbal report on the encampment.
If
members wish to discuss this or say anything, I'm more than happy to take things away, Chairman.
Yeah, in that case, can I just say a few words? I don't think any of us can actually support the camp because it's on somebody else's land, but I think a lot of us can support the aims and objectives of the camp, which is against fracking in this area, which is, I think, something that this council has generally accepted so far. The camp, as I understand it, is well run. There's alcohol and drugs are not allowed on the site. There's no litter. There was traffic parked outside when it started. There were cars and vehicles parked outside, which caused a bit of an obstruction. They have been moved inside the camp. I don't think the camp is a problem to anybody at the moment. One thing I would say is I would hate to find this council being drawn into an argument between other people. I mean, the argument is between the frackers and Third Energy. I don't think this council should get involved and be part of that argument. And if there is a complaint by Third Energy, then I think we should defer consideration and not, if I put it this way, we must make haste slowly to deal with it. I would suggest, Jem, we don't want to put ourselves in a position where somebody else might say that this council is being that they have to take action because this council told them to. Because that would then sort of put this council in a sort of invidious position of being blamed, I think. And this is just a comment, Chairman. I realise that no decision is being asked, and I'm not making any bringing any motion. I'm just making a comment, and I hope that this is something that members can bear in mind for the future, and perhaps take account of. They may or may not disagree with me, but I hope that they will.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm sure you appreciate that there's probably a number of agencies keeping an eye on things, not least the Highway Authority, who are probably, I mean, this entrance to the site is not that far from the A169 and a relatively busy junction to Kirby Mispitton and Flamingo Land. So I'm aware that the Highway Authority have had some complaints, but it's largely been around mud on the road on a particularly wet day when cars had tried to get off the road and then drag mud back on the road. And clearly if there are obstruction issues, well, we're into a policing matter. So there are a variety of things to sort of deal with things. So at the moment it's a bit of a watch this space. But not everybody has the same views, and it could be that we get complaints from various quarters. As you're aware, we're then duty bound to work on those. So it's just really a heads up as much as anything else, that if you didn't already know, it's there. I can't imagine anybody sitting in this room doesn't know it's there, but it is there, and we're just monitoring at the moment.
Councillor Mr. Shields.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, I understand that you haven't made any sort of attempt to meet anybody on this encampment at all. We've just sort of observed things, or what has ever come perhaps up through the press, but we haven't actually, as a council...
Certainly from a planning point of view, we've not made any contact yet. I mean, there have been visits from Safer Rydale at an early stage, but that was a very preliminary visit. I don't think there have been any other visits since.
Well, the whole thing seems very akin to the sort of gathering that happened on May the 20th when... the whole matter of fracking, of course, was discussed at Candy Hall. And the front of Candy Hall was filled with people, all of whom were very peace-loving and quiet, and it was all very friendly because, having made my point up in the building, I did go down to see the people who were downstairs who had come from all over the country. And it does seem, I mean, the whole attitude, at least at the moment, is one of peaceful, just sort of disapproval, of course, naturally, of fracking generally. But there's not intended, I think, at all, and I hope whenever it comes to it, there should be anything that's really going to be very unpleasant. I'm almost sure it wouldn't be. But I think it represents the people who are there, and they're not all local, represents the sort of strength of feeling that is felt about the whole operation in the country. We'll be interested to hear how things go, and obviously if there is any involvement directly, you know, with the planning committee and the council, I'm sure we'll all be kept in touch with it. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Wrong one. Just a word really about really about the sanitary provisions that are made up there, because obviously if people are up there encamped, that will be required to be disposed of. I don't want to see any unhygienic situations, not like I have at Barton Hill at the moment with the traveller encampment in the lay-by, which is of great worry at the moment. I'd like to speak to you about that later. And also, I absolutely uphold people's rights to protest and to do what they need to do if they feel very strongly about something. That's absolutely unequivocal. However, what I will say is, having been up near the Scottish Nuclear Submarine Summit and seen the camp that evolved there, it did become a real mess, and it attracted people who, for want of a better term, were professional objectors. And I don't want to see that happen at Kirby Misperton. I think these are people that are local people that have got genuine objections to this problem. But if it starts to escalate into something really terrible and really untidy, I think we've got to do something about it.
Councillor Andrews.
Just coming back very quickly, Chairman. I understand that anybody who wishes to see the site is welcome to go to the site. So... councillors concerned about health hygiene or whatever can visit the site and see what it's like if they wish.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak on this one? No. Councillor Mrs. Frank.
yeah, I just want to say that this really isn't about whether you're fracking or anti-fracking. This is about a camp that could possibly become a big problem, and we really can't say that Third Energy, if Third Energy object to it, this council shouldn't get into that sort of argument. It's not about that sort of argument. It's not about fracking. It's not about anti-fracking. It's about a camp that isn't a legal camp there, and if it does become a problem, and I agree wholeheartedly with Caroline, this could escalate and people could come from far and wide just because they want to be objectors, like people do sometimes, and as long as it's local people doing they're objecting in a sensible way, that's fine. But I really think that the it could escalate, and particularly as it's been so well publicised on television and social media and everything else. And if it does become a problem, then I think this council does need to intervene and something does need to be done about it. And I'm not, and that's nothing to do with fracking, that's to do with A Camp being dispersed.
Thank you. Anybody else wanted to speak? No. Okay, right. We'll move on now to the urgent business, which was the County Council consultation is the word I'm looking for, yes.
Chairman, I did try and circulate this round to as many people as I could earlier by email, so I hope people picked up my email. Which actually enclosed, all it did was enclose the copy of the consultation letter and a plan which showed you all where the level crossing is. Well, I'm sure you I'm sure you sort of guess where that was after all this time. And so we're still consulting on this. I think we're consulting on this last March, I think, if not before. But that was at a stage where I think I recall attending an area committee somewhere, and we now have got to a point where we're being consulted on a 7.5-ton weight limit, which I think was our suggested weight limit some months ago. I think at one point it was being suggested to go forward by county as an 18-ton weight limit. That appears to have changed. But the latest consultation, which was dated the 6th of January, but not received here until the 11th, relates to a further consultation on possible exemptions to the 7.5-ton restriction limit acknowledge those vehicles that might legitimately wish to enter the zone for deliveries or business purposes or the like, and a mechanism for doing that. Now, the consultation letter, to be brutally honest, doesn't give us a lot of detail. Other than to say the proposal would include the standard exemptions for emergency service vehicles, highway maintenance vehicles, etc. I'd rather would have had the full list personally, but having discussed this with the council's environmental health officer, because clearly this is very much linked to air quality and what's happening here, is that clearly we want the 7.5-ton weight limit to deliver as much as it can, and I think the Environmental Health Officer's view is, well, that this should be based on no, you can't unless you've got a very good reason for coming in through the area. So Steve Richmond, prior to tonight, had suggested that in his opinion, immediate thoughts for county in this meeting tonight is that the exemptions need to apply for deliveries and collections solely within the air quality management area, not travelling through it to get to somewhere else. That any of those exemptions permits, however they're decided by the county council, must be on a case-by-case basis and a case presented as to the reason why such a permit is required, so in other words a business reason for it. He also went on to suggest that we might need to decide if we wish the exemption to apply to vehicles like RDC, refuse and recycling vehicles. It may do, but the etc. doesn't tell me. I'm advised that it does apply to buses, for example, and public service vehicles could enter into the area. Also to go on to stress the need for clear signage. And those signage and the extent of the signage needs to be in place well in advance of before you get to the crossing. So in other words, on suitable places on the A64 or perhaps on the Beverley Road approaches or the top of Mill Street, wherever, so that drivers who don't know can be directed away from this sensitive location. So in other words, suitable advanced signage in advanced locations. And then two additional points that in discussion today we've come up with, which are then going on to discuss the measures taken to enforce the weight limit, because these, if vehicles do have a permit, it needs to be clearly discernible and identifiable, and so that enforcement can be done. Our understanding is that the effectiveness of that is also in the hands of the County Council, because we believe the monitoring and enforcement is trading standards rather than the police. So why it's trading standards, heaven only knows, but it's not like a speeding issue. It's a County Council monitoring and trading standards issue. So those are the sort of officer feelings in relation to the sort of things that we feel we need to respond to at this stage to at least get those comments back in. Again, apologies for the shortness of notice, but we've just got no time to deal with that. Again, if members wish to mull things over tonight, take it away and feed them through. I mean, that might, we've got to the 27th. It's not tomorrow on this occasion. But if members wish to discuss this now or bounce around some ideas, that was the idea of bringing it to committee.
Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. I think the points made by the officer is perfectly correct. I mean, I would agree with all of them. The one concern I do have is vehicles relating to business. I think that vehicles relating to businesses should be restricted to businesses which are within, say, a quarter of a mile of a crossing. Because there was one suggestion that it should be a mile from the crossing, and of course one of the big offenders as far as traffic coming across that crossing is concerned is traffic from the Whitewall Quarry. Allow businesses from a fair distance to cross that crossing, you're actually undermining the whole purpose of the 7.5 ton weight limit.
I don't think that's the officer's suggestion, Chairman. I mean, I think the, you know, if you talk about the Watts lorries, for example, which was one of the things in the quarry and the asphalt plant that was being proposed, was actually, and I know they lost their appeal and it went by the by, but one of the suggested things was to route vehicles out of that area. So just because of the fact that there's a quarry there, we wouldn't see that as a justification for letting them go through. They could go around.
What I'm saying, Chairman, is that if businesses are allowed to use that crossing for heavy goods vehicles, then there should be in excess of 7.5 tonnes, and it should be from a defined area, there should be a radius, I think, of about half a mile on either side of the crossing. Because otherwise, I think it will totally undermine the whole purpose of it. And that is my suggestion. I understand what Gary is telling us. I do appreciate that. But what I'm saying is, this is something extra that needs to be put in.
Basically, I'm interpreting that as if you're not within a radius, don't bother applying in the first place. Okay.
Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We did discuss this quite extensively at Area Committee because we've been pushing for such a long time to get this 7.5-ton weight limit, and we were very disappointed at Area Committee when they suggested 18.5 tonnes, and it was very clear from Area Committee that that wasn't what we wanted. We wanted 7.5 tonnes, and I'm pleased they've finally taken it on board. But it is only a temporary measure. It is only something that's like 2 years on to see how it goes. So it's by no means a definite in place forever measure. But what I will say is I think any businesses that are within the air quality management area, and I'm thinking, I don't know whether Tate Smith are within the area, then I think you've perhaps got to give them an example. I don't think you can discriminate against a business that's within the air quality area to get them that would struggle then to get in and out and make it financially disadvantageous to everybody else. I think you've got to make that. So that would be my... I hear what Councillor Andrews is saying, but I think if the business is within the air quality area and they're running vehicles greater than 7.5 tonnes, then I think we almost are duty-bound to permit them. But I wouldn't permit anybody else.
I think you might be right, actually. I think some of the Sheepfoot Hill area probably isn't in the air quality management area, but they have no other alternative. Yeah, fair point.
Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Thank you, Chairman. Norton Town Council discussed this matter, amongst other things, just last night. And various suggestions were put forward. And I think I'd be right in saying, I'm sure Mrs. Keel would, if allowed to speak, would agree, that something that Councillor Andrews also mentioned, there should be a sort of quarter of a mile limit, from during which vehicles could move. And in particular, in Malton, of course, there are supermarkets. And they have got deliveries, and of course these are vast size vehicles that come through. And it was suggested that probably it would be helpful if, for those kinds of vehicles, there should be a time limit, possibly something like after 7 o'clock in the evening until 7 o'clock in the morning. So if they were dealt with during that time, wouldn't interfere with people going to work, children going to school, or the people who are going to go between Malton and Norton at that particular time. And that was, I think, one of the actual points made particularly by the Norton Council. Signage is important. At the moment, we're having a most terrible time on the Norton side, in any case, over the different road arrangements for one way and then stopping an area where up Church Street most people have been accustomed to come straight out and can't. And again, signage is there, but certainly signage will be needed all over the area of Malton and Norton in order to make it quite clear who can come and when they can't come. And I think also the major buildings, like the supermarkets and probably Tate Smith and other ones where they have these vast vehicles, will have to probably have a permit so that they can show this if necessary. But I think the timing of the day or night when they can come through will be essential. That will actually cut down the pollution in the first place. It will also allow businesses to keep going and to have the supplies that in some cases, of course, are almost daily. So that is how Norton felt. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, I endorse what's been said before. I think rather than just going back to identifying the businesses within an area should be able to operate through the area, I think rather than defining a strict radius, identify local businesses that might be affected. That was my main point. What we're talking about here, I think we sort of get an overview. What we're talking about here is pollution and air quality, and we're dealing with this through a weight limit rather than the way that vehicles now work. Some of these big double-deckers, for example, would be definitely over 7.5-ton limit, but the coastline is the very latest Category 4 engines are incredibly clean. I'm not sure that necessarily how we deal with this, possibly with if we're going, I know we're trying to revise and revisit the camera partnership, and there is technology available with ANPR to identify categories of vehicles and also individual vehicles which would have a license to operate. Thinking aloud, that was one way of doing it. You know, it might be, and I know this is only a temporary measure and not for very long, but thinking ahead, as we try and think ahead, if we can think of, for example, Councillor Thornton, at the beginning of the meeting, mentioned electrical vehicles, electrically propelled vehicles. They could well be above the 7.5-ton or whatever the eventual weight limit might be, but be very clean. And so we should be open to the idea of revising these regulations. I'll be very, very quickly. I mean, of course, electrically propelled vehicles might be clean, and it rather depends how the electricity is generated in the first place.
My understanding is that public service vehicles are exempt. you know, the buses and the like. But I suppose the issue here is, and the more you read this letter, the vague, you know, experimental 7.5-ton weight limit, but for how long? 'Tis 2 years, is it? You see, somebody was speculating whether it was 18 months earlier on today, so just clarify that. I mean, it does need to be a period of time that is sufficient to actually monitor and assess something. But the other thing did relate to the, I mean, increasingly we're getting into the realms of vehicle recognition. Well, you know, should they be putting a CCTV camera up there then, you know, to monitor it? If you're not staffed to monitor it, should you have the eye in the sky or whatever it is that's looking down and saying, right, that's the registration number, that one's over, dink, it's not you know, exempted by a permit. So I think there's quite a lot of clever technology that could be put to use here to do that.
Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking in terms of how you could actually make sure that the vehicle had a permit, and obviously some sort of thing on the screen would help, but then we're not going to have trading standards standing by the bridge day in, day out. We do need to get good background counts, not only in the air quality area, but also in the rat runs where the lorries may go instead of. Thank you very much. I got as far as having an electronic sort of pinger, you know, as they do in the congestion zone in London. But some means of using the technology to identify and count the vehicles of different sizes and so on.
For those members who aren't aware, there is an air quality steering group that's attended by some officers here. I've attended some of the meetings myself, but the council's environmental health officer has had quite an input into that in terms of requesting counting, additional air quality measuring point. You know, there's quite a lot going on that. The dilemma we have is that we are reliant for the county council to do quite a lot of that, so we just keep pressing to make sure that we've got the background information against which we can then move forward, hopefully.
Chair, could I ask, are there any members who are on that group? And if you're short of a member, I would like to volunteer to listen and contribute.
I think it's an officer group, actually. But I'd have to ask the question whether members have previously been on the group or not. I don't know. I've only been latterly invited to it.
Councillor Andrew.
It is an officer group, Chairman. It sits secretly. Members don't know when it's taking place. They don't know what there's going to be discussed, and minutes are not produced.
That's incorrect, Chairman. Minutes are produced, and we've produced information.
Minutes are not produced and disseminated. Yes, they are produced, but they are not disseminated. So members are not informed of what is going on. And there has been quite a lot of correspondence between members of the public and officers of the council, and in fact members of the council, I think, suggesting that really, what is the point of having that group unless it is brought into light exactly what they discussed, where public can actually see the discussion, and when members are actually included on the group. But anyway, that's one thing. But the main point I wanted to say is I agree entirely with what Councillor Mrs. Shields has said. I do think the area where businesses are allowed to cross the crossing should be closely defined. Otherwise, if it's not closely defined, it will be very, very easy for all sorts of transgressions to take place, which would be very difficult to prove, and could make enforcement very difficult. You need a simple form of enforcement and simple rules that can be enforced, and a distance rule is the right kind of rule, in my view. I would prefer a distance rule in relation to the radius from the crossing. Councillor Goodrick would prefer a distance rule relating to an area defined on the map. Well, I've, as far as I'm concerned, probably either of those would do, provided it's clearly and closely defined. The area from which businesses can operate who can cross the crossing should be a very tight area, very close to the crossing. Councillor Shields suggested a quarter of a mile. I would withdraw my half a mile, and I would go back. I would go with Councillor Shields' quarter of a mile radius from the crossing.
Chairman, I think the dilemma we have is we're not absolutely sure who county have consulted on this latest round of consultations. This consultation isn't on their website, or wasn't earlier on today. It started on the 6th. We hadn't had head and hair of it until the 11th, which gives us precious little time. We've got 2 weeks to respond, you know, and with the best will in the world, you know, we're then in a position where we're not able to bring you any semblance of a considered officer report. It's nonsense, really, but that's what we're dealing with. And at this stage, I've no idea even, and I'm not sure how many consultations that have been on the face of it done by county now, where residents in the vicinity, as far as I'm aware, don't even know anything about it. You've got a frontage of there's a terrace of properties that are right next to where the junction has just been realigned, may not even know. And I can't sit here and tell you. And for an authority such as Rydell, which consults anybody who doesn't move quickly enough, it's just an anathema that, you know, we've got residents who live within stone's throw of the site who don't know anything about it, but that could be the case. I'm saying this in the earshot of at least one county councillor. I'm hoping you might relay it back to another one, Councillor Andrews, and on the basis that, well, you might have a bit more clout than I've got, because, you know, I've been saying these things since last March, and here we are still consulting on something that isn't even in place. It drives you mad.
Chairman, can I...
We're not recording this, are we, Chairman? I'm sure we probably are. I'll be sacked, won't we?
Chairman, can I suggest... can I suggest, you know, members have made various comments. Can I suggest that those comments... And I don't think they're particularly inconsistent with each other. Mm. Could be put into a letter form in draft and circulated to members of this committee to see if members wish to make any alterations.
I was just about to make that suggestion, Chairman. Here we are, it's the 17th. We've probably got a week, yeah, really. And if I can, with Steve Richmond, encapsulate something into a draft response in the next couple of days, knowing what my diary commitments are tomorrow, but probably by Thursday-ish, and get those round to the planning committee, and then if people have got something to say, say it, and then if I agree a final response with the chairman,
could it possibly go out to all members rather than just members of this committee, and then they can feed back in and then draft it out to us and we'll...
Well, I'm in your hands, Chairman. I mean, clearly,
yeah, I think normally
this sort of thing would be the council sort of subdivides its responsibilities, and to the planning committee it gives this sort of role in terms of being the committee that would make the consultation response. I suppose, given where it is and what it is, my suggestion as an alternative to that, to all 30, some of whom might not actually have all that to say, is maybe to say this plus the Moulton and Norton members.
Well, yeah.
Does that,
yeah.
That yes. Maybe yeah. This committee plus Moulton
yeah.
and Norton?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay, Councillor Thornton.
Thank you. 2 points. The first is that I think we've got to present our plan to government quite soon as to what we're doing, or county probably have to present their plan as to what we're doing about the air quality issues.
That's the air quality action plan.
Yeah, so that's in a draft. But then it's got to be finalised, I think, by July. And so could we have plenty of heads-up warning as to when that's going to happen and to see the paperwork before we have to decide by the next 24 hours?
I mean, the conundrum with it is we have the duty to submit the air quality action plan, but actually the vast majority of the actions are probably at the behest of the county council. So it's more a question of getting the buy-in to that. You know, what we're going to do, what we're going to do, by when, what we expect it to deliver, how we're going to measure it, all that sort of stuff.
Thank you. And the second thing is that I wonder if it would be possible when we have, like for this, letters going to County Council, whatever, as a sort of an amalgamation of our thoughts. Can they go on to the agenda papers, at like the recording here? Is that something that would be possible?
What I'd do, Chairman, is circulate round to the members of the committee or whoever we've involved in the consultation what the final response was. So we'd email it. Well, I know not everybody's on email, but we could email it or pigeonhole it. We'd normally send you what we'd send. It's like a question from council. We'd, you know, if somebody's got a follow-up question, we'd answer the question and send it round to everybody. That's how we'd do it.
Could you just have a word with your communications people, because I don't get those without having an iPad.
Well, how do you receive information normally?
I look on the public papers.
Right. But if you were one of those people who didn't use an iPad or don't use a council email, then we would put a hard copy in your pigeonhole. That's how you get it, isn't it, Councillor Andrews?
Well, yes, and the trouble about that is that I only call in the council offices very, very occasionally, and the result is that I get things sent to me far too late. And when they do come, they come through the post. It would be much better, I think, if.
I'm getting into something that's way beyond the scope of this.
Chairman, can you ask me a question? Please let me finish. It would be much better, I think, if take stuff which is emailed out to members is sent out by post to those members who do not have the council iPad.
Perhaps easier if you've got an iPad, a council iPad, but anyway. Councillor Mrs Shields, briefly, please.
Can I assure you that as a member of the county, I shall take every opportunity, because the council's only come into life again, more or less, you know, after Christmas and New Year, when I go back, and particularly at the major meetings, there are four quarterly meetings in the year, to reprimand quite a number of the officers, or at least the people who are on the executives. People who are on the executives for the lack of communication. This is one important issue where we haven't had much. The other one is that all the changes to the roads on Norton, which are all tied up with this matter anyhow, have been absolutely lacking. The town council was not even consulted. Nobody was consulted. Just suddenly roadworks took place and changed the whole thing around, so that where you had a right-of-way, there was no right-of-way, and then where there used to be one, it's all closed off, and the hesitation and the worry that goes on at that crossing, particularly on the Norton side, although it's bad enough trying to get into Moulton, and it's all due to the fact that there's been lack of consultation in the county. And I will be very happy to tell the members of the county openly as soon as we get the opportunity, and it'll be in this next week. So I'm doing everything I can or will do on that particular point, Chairman. Thank you.
May I say a word? I'm being someone that uses the crossing in Norton quite regularly. The big problem occurs by people going along Church Street and thinking they've got to give way to people come down Wellham Road. I mean, I've seen there have been Yorkshire water vehicles, there have been a small van parked there. I thought, why are you going? Then he waits for something to come down Wellham Road. Stupid man.
Councillor Moore, that is totally another matter. This is about the consultation about the crossing. It's just absolutely crazy.
There's a broad white line. Why don't people? They should stop at that, and the other people can go. Give way to everyone coming from the right, and it'll sort everything out. You know, it's.
Thank you. Right, this is going to be delegated to the head of planning, in conjunction with the Moulton and Norton members and members of this committee.
I will contact you as best I can.
can I just say, once you've finished with all this, Gary, I really think a strong letter ought to be sent to County Hall and tell them in no uncertain terms that they haven't given us enough time to consult and deal with this, and that they really need to get their act together and give us more time.
Well, we're just agreeing.
Do you want to vote on it?
It's a decision.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so we're just to agree that this is delegated to the Head of Planning in conjunction with the Moulton and Norton members and the members of the Planning Committee. So I'll put that to the vote, and then it's all legal and above board. Thank you. That's unanimous, thank you. Now we've got...
The date and the time.
The date and the time for the site visit will be the 31st of January, I think it is, fortnight today. Mm-hmm. And we'll go for 10:30. Okay, thank you.
It's the joint mineral waste plans going to the executive on that day, so I will be...
Those who can attend will, and
10:30.
So, okay. Thank you.
Yes,
they'll send you.
Don't worry, we'll get you there.
Have you not been for meal? Thank you. Agenda item 13 is list of applications determined and delegated, and there's update on appeal decisions 14, and I now declare this meeting closed. Thank you.